Welcome to the June 19th, 2018 board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. Mrs. Sheffer will not be joining us tonight. She is at her daughter's wedding. So we congratulate her and her family on that momentous occasion. It's really exciting. Item 2.02, do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes, sir.
We have a consensus on the order of business. Let's go to item 2.03, approval of minutes for 6-5-2018. Would someone like to make a motion?
I will move the minutes of June 5th, 2018.
We have a motion. Anybody? Okay, Mr. Buckman seconds that. any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Let me get down here. Where the heck is it? This is making me crazy. All right. Things are my electronic board thing is not working great tonight. All right. Let's move to item 2.04, approval of minutes for 6-11-2018.
I'll move approval.
It's been a motion by Mrs. Roger. I'm going to go with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers for a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Correspondence, the board did not receive any correspondence through the district office. We did, though, I believe, individually receive letters from Mrs. Judy Neuhauser. Item 3.02, public comment. Let me just read through this really quickly. And remind people of the public comment rules, that everybody has a right to speak, that we would ask that you stand and be recognized, give your name, any group if that's to be represented. We ask that your presentation be brief, no more than 3 minutes per person. If you have materials to go to the board, please distribute them to Mrs. Campbell or Mrs. Holmes, and then that will be given to the board, and it will go enter into the official record. We also have a document camera available that you can use. Your time will begin as soon as you arrive at the podium. Questions asked by the public shall be answered by either me or somebody from the staff. If there's questions that might require an investigation, we will refer them to the board, to the staff for further investigation and response at a further meeting. We won't take action on any item during public comment because that would be a violation of our agenda and the Brown Act. And finally, you can offer criticism of school operations and programs that may concern them, but in public session, the board won't hear personal complaints of school personnel or complaints against any employee of the system. Other channels provide for board consideration and disposition of complaints involving individuals. That said, is there anybody that would like to address the board on an item on public comment? Okay, seeing none, then let's move. Item 4.01, business and budget update.
Thank you. We have a couple of things to review today. The board may remember they got a letter from a young man at Laguna Middle School a couple months ago about water bottle filler stations. And so I actually met that young man out of Laguna, and we walked the site and looked at the two gymnasiums. And I'm happy to tell the board that we completed that about 2 weeks before the end of the school year. So he actually got to, since he was an eighth grader moving on to high school, he didn't benefit that much from it. But he, but Rick Stimson put those in both for the boys and the girls, and so hopefully that's a nice feature. And I will say, I think across the district, it's something that the kids appreciate and use and like, having those throughout all of our schools. So it's been a plus. In terms of the budget situation right now, so the state budget, it looks like it's moving through, and it's an interesting dynamic in that a lot of, you know, Governor Brown has is focused on LCFF and fully funding LCFF for school districts, which is great. For us as a basic aid school district, we did take kind of a hit in one-time funds. So initially at the May revise, the number per student was $344 per student that was going to go out, and they basically apply it towards your mandated costs along with, so we receive it as a basic aid school district. And so that number has actually been lowered to $184 a student. So it's about an $800,000 hit to the district. So he agreed, and again, this is the Assembly Senate working together with the governor. They did put more money into the LCFF, so they raised the COLA for this year, so kind of made that, you know, better for most school districts that are state funded. It was a positive thing for them, but when they take away the one time for us, it's not necessarily a positive. So that was probably the key takeaway. So we'll be working with Julie Lang, throughout the summer. Once it's officially passed and we get all the information, we'll put all that in for the board and make all of our adjustments. And then we do what's called a 45-day revise. And so we'll share that in August with the board in terms of what that looks like.
Mr. Quisenberry, you look like you guys.
He's trying to hit his button. Go ahead,
goes.
Mr. Quisenberry.
It goes. By the time I got it turned on, I think I forgot my question.
It's okay.
So I was so busy focused on that. So I'll just, that's
loss
it.
Of money, loss of money one time. No? Okay. So fortunately for us, in our 10-year budget, we were about $1.4 million in the black. So this was a positive year for us in terms of initially at the start. So while this does bring down, you know, the potential, you know, good year that we had, I'm really interested to see how we finish up with the number of retirees that we had and some of the personnel reductions. It'll be really interesting to see where that comes in at in November when we've have all of our positions and we've moved through, and then we find out what our property tax assessment's going to be. So comes into November, beginning of December, which I feel is going to be good. Should be a high number again in terms of the cost of housing and those types of things in our area and the number of new housing that's being built.
So there was my question is really kind of clarification for the public. And that is that the, when they set aside this money for the LCFF, it goes to specific targeted groups, you know, SED, English learners, but it doesn't go per student per se. There's a threshold that districts have to meet. Is that correct?
So there's the LCFF is made up of three components. So there's a base funding amount that all school districts get. So the COLA is applied to that. So that benefits all students basically. Then they have supplemental funds. So students that are free and reduced lunch, economically disadvantaged, right? They're foster homeless youth or ELs. The districts receive a certain amount of money per student that fits those, right? Unduplicated. So if you're economically disadvantaged and EL, you don't get two amounts for that student. You just get the one. So that also got the COLA increased. And then for those districts that have over 55% in those categories, they receive concentration funds. So those funds for those districts really went up. And so it's an interesting dynamic because the focus has really been on this equity, providing more funds for the neediest students in California. But it, in some ways, it's caused a little bit of a break because you might have a school district such as Templeton or Tascadero that doesn't necessarily have a lot of those students, and so they're not seeing the huge increase in funding that maybe you're seeing in Santa Maria, where 95% of the students may fit that, you know, category. So it's an interesting dynamic, I think, across the state. I think overall for state-funded districts, it's a positive. And so for most school districts in the state of California, they are going to be very happy this year in terms of funding levels. And so the bad part that we've talked about is after this year, there's probably not going to be a lot of increases anymore because Governor Brown has closed the gap. So whereas now it's fully funded at this point. So in the future, it's just COLAs. That's it. So it's really interesting to see. I mean, unless there's some other legislation that moves forward. So we'll have to relook at our 10-year budget because, as you know, Julie Lang does a kind of a comparison of LCFF versus basic aid. So by LCFF kind of getting more money, that'll close the gap of where we're at or how much we're in basic aid status. I don't think that that's still even close in terms of falling out of basic aid status at this point. But those are things that, again, we'll adjust with the 45-day revise. We'll share with the board and kind of update you on it.
Thank you. For our edification and the edification of the public, could you just enumerate a few of the things that we might ordinarily, under circumstances that we've had in recent years, what might we spend this type of one-time money on?
Well, to be honest with you, it's helped us without the mitigation funds from Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. It's actually helped us not have to make substantial cuts as quickly. We've been able to, you know, kind of slowly make the personnel reductions and cuts that we've had to make in the past. I believe the board has done a good job of, you know, we have bought a few buses every couple of years and some new vehicles. And so increase, you know, some of those one-time purchases are the best way to spend those dollars as we move forward. But reality for us and the situation we are with Diablo Canyon closing down, it's really provided us a little bit of room in terms of not having to cut too dramatically too fast.
So we've lost a buffer.
Yes.
A short-term buffer.
A little bit of a buffer. We're still, I mean, from normally we would only receive $286,000 in mandated reimbursements. So the $1.3 million that we're looking at is still much better. You know, it's $1 million more than what we would normally receive. So it's a positive, getting the one time. It's just not quite as exciting as it was at the May revision. So, but that's okay. We'll move forward. And then lastly, the Janus decision is coming.
Thank you.
So we've heard a lot about the Supreme Court making a decision about union fees, so coming forward. And so I will say that Kristen Newland, our payroll department, have been working together, watching webinars, talking with the county and the effects of this and what's going to happen when that happens. And so the basic key right now, the premise is that if it passes, in that unions can't make people pay dues, which it looks like it's headed that way from all indications from the Supreme Court, then we have to stop taking out agency fee members or the people that are forced to pay union dues. So the district does that. And then there's all kinds of other legislation going right through in terms of for those people that are union members, if they decide, hey, I don't want to pay my dues anymore, how does that happen? What's the process for somebody getting out of their union dues? And a lot of times right now, the way it's worded and looks like it's going through the state, they have to actually go to their union to get that to stop. They don't just come to the district and say, hey, stop taking out my money. So there's a lot of intricacies. And so, again, Kristen, payroll, Julie, they've been working together on this to kind of keep up to date and to know what we have to do when this decision comes down. They're expecting that around June 25th.
So, Ryan, has there been a cost of living for things like special education and other state aid? And is that like 2%, 2.3%?
Yeah, a little bit lower. A little bit lower than the LCFF. So some.
Okay. All right. Great. Any other questions? Okay, how about 4.02, Ed Services Update? Mrs. McGrath.
Great. Happy to. First of all, we do have summer school underway. So we have lots of elementary students gathered as well as middle school and high school students that are gathered at our middle schools as our high schools are under construction and we house those that are middle schools instead. Interestingly enough, there's been a lot of interest in online courses versus kind of the traditional brick and mortar courses. So you'll see a report on that in August about summer school completion and credits earned and that kind of thing. But just interesting to note that we've seen that kind of shift towards student interest in online courses. And as you remember, we implemented APEX courses that were A to G approved courses. So students are able to achieve either credit recovery or some original credit. So great opportunity for kids. You'll hear more about that when we at our next board meeting in August. Also, you know, it's interesting. Remember with the SBAC results, when we would hear from the state that you're going to get these SBAC results right away, you'll see information quickly. Well, it's true now. We already have 100% of the scores in, and we're able to begin to draw conclusions. So I can actually even share a little bit of just our very first blush at beginning to look at that. It looks like, just a reminder, this is all students in 3rd through 8th grade and 11th grade, so around 4,000-ish students. And in English Language Arts, at our first best guess, it looks like we have increased 1% to about 68% of students that have met or exceeded those standards. And in mathematics, also an additional 1%, so that we're at about 62% that meet or exceed those standards. It also looks like a couple of our schools have had some real significant increases. Los Ranchos showed a substantial gain in English language arts, as well as Monarch Grove and Morro Bay High School showing a significant improvement in math. So we look forward to being able to start digging into that, and good for the state, right, to actually come through with getting those results in quickly. So that's great to see. Also, we had some great progress in our movement towards equity and civil dialogue. So we had the pleasure of meeting Trudy Tuttle Arriaga. She came, and many of the people that attended the Equity Institute and attended those weekend sessions throughout the year this year came across Trudy. And we had the pleasure of having her present to our administrative group, both certificated and classified, and kind of kick off for the administrators, what does equity mean for our district, and begin to kind of introduce that topic. And she was excellent. Excellent in kind of theory and broad ideas, and also bringing it right down to the floor quickly and really getting us to question things, and doing so in a way that it was easy to receive. So she was really impressive. We also had the pleasure of meeting Kristen Looney, who is an executive director of a nonprofit in Washington, D.C., who specializes in civil dialogue. So how do you specifically train students in engaging in civil dialogue around conversations, and especially conversations with controversial topics? So a real pleasure to meet her as well, and think that the combination of Trudy as well as Kristen can provide a pretty amazing steps forward for our district when it comes to equity and civil dialogue. So we're really looking forward to that work. And I believe that's it. Thank you.
So, Kimberly, that's great that we got the SBACs. Sounds like they might be here in time for the sites to use them, to use the results.
Absolutely.
That's really good.
Yeah, it's great. So in the fall, last year we started kind of a fall data review with the elementary principals gather as Title I, and then non-Title I schools, and the secondary schools gather as well. And so that'll give them an even deeper look to be able to start getting down to individual students and subgroups, and to be able to do the great work that they do.
It sounds also that, not really close, but am I hearing that it sort of mirrors some of the results that we're going to hear later this evening, the 68s? And
it's interesting. You know, we do see some improvement there and some parallel, and obviously we look for that. We want to make sure our common assessments stay in line with rigor with the SBAC. If anything, we want to err on the side of a little more difficult and make sure that we're, you know, holding to that level of rigor. So I do think we'll see some parallels.
Okay, Measure D update. Mr. Pickerton, back to you.
Yeah, so it's a busy summer. So things have kicked off. Got a lot of big projects happening throughout. Mr. Bonnet's been flying his drone and taking some great shots that I'll share with the board of the construction projects. And there's just a lot happening. We unfortunately had some vandalism at the J Wing at Morro Bay High School over the weekend.
Shoot.
So, you know, nothing that was so dramatic that can't be fixed or can't be taken care of, but just a drag, right, when you're trying to do something nice and go through it. But so we actually have worked with Mr. Bonden is working with Jeremy Kolisch, our IT director, we're going to look at putting some cameras up. So, again, throughout, you know, these areas and kind of just making sure that we've, you know, making it as safe and secure as possible. So Mr. Bonden and I went to the site and checked it out, and, again, it was – throwing some paint around, spackle around, you know, some taking fire extinguishers, blowing any of those types of things. So, it's something that you know, we're going to continue to look at. Morro Bay Police Department was there helping us, you know, take reports and go through it. So we'll see, and hopefully we'll get some leads for that.
Brian?
Yes.
Was it more vandalism driven as opposed to
yes
opportunistic theft?
Yeah, it was total vandalism.
Look for a pirate.
These were that we kind of the auto shop actually has some cameras inside. We can kind of make out the kids. So they were on bicycles, probably, you know, a couple younger teenage and maybe an elementary student that were on bikes that could be made. I just couldn't make out exactly who they were. So we'll tell people that we're going to have cameras because we want to deter people from going. Right? We don't make it a secret or anything in terms of. You know, catching people or whatever. We want people to just, you know, again, stay away from those construction sites. You know, this is something that it hurts the district, it hurts our kids, hurts our schools when these things happen. So on a positive note, they're starting to lay the synthetic track down at Morro Bay High School. So looks beautiful, a lot of work happening. They have, you know, totally decimated Bellevue Santa Fe. So it looks like a bomb went off at that campus, right? Because all the portable classrooms that were there are gone now, four are gone, and they're doing all the infrastructure groundwork. So very exciting on that campus. We actually moved two of the portables over to Slo High, so to make the last two temporary classrooms here. So a lot of infrastructure happening here at Student Support Services. I mean, there's a lot happening. And so that's a good thing, right? Because we went for a long period of time without a lot happening. And so for all the people that were like, what's going on? Now they're actually seeing some progress. And so it's a positive thing. So we have a couple projects that we'll be sharing tonight to help us keep that progress moving.
Item 5.01, this is a resolution, 24-17-18, delegation of signature authority. And come on, get over to that. Who's taking that one on?
So,
is that you, Ryan?
Yeah, normally okay. Kim does it. So this will be okay. Good for Luana to know. But so the delegation of signature authority. So we've had some changes in terms of our signature resolution. So we do this each year, and just to update the people that are able to sign contracts and information on behalf of the Board of Education.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to comment on this item? Seeing no one, bring it back to the board. Any comments from board members? This will be a roll call vote.
I'll move resolution 24-17-18, delegation of signature authority.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar, second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Mrs. Campbell?
Mr. Millar? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, Mr. Buckman is gone. Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Passes 5-0.
Motion carries 5-0 with one absence. Two absences, actually. Item number 5.02, resolution 25-17-18, order of election. And this would be Dr. Prater.
Yes, Board, the next two items, resolutions, are really house cleaning to prepare our district and the board for the upcoming election in November. There will be four vacancies to the Board of Trustees. And in that trustee area one, it is Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Sheffer. And trustee area two, it is Mr. Quisenberry and Mrs. Roger. And so this resolution is to acknowledge that so that we can provide this information to the county so that we can prepare for the ballot.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address us on this item? And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there anybody who'd like to make a motion?
I would like to make a motion for acceptance of resolution number 25-17-18.
We have a motion by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, second by Mr. Millar. Any board discussion? Again, Mrs. Campbell, this is a roll call vote.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, yes. Mr. Millar, Mr. Unger,
yes.
Mrs. Roger,
yes.
Mr. Quisenberry,
yes.
Mr. Buckman.
Abstain.
Passes. Passes.
Otherwise, occupied. Yes, I heard most of it.
Passes 6-0.
So it passes 6-0. Item 5.03, consolidation of election. This is, I believe, another housekeeping item. Dr. Prater.
Yes, and this particular resolution is about consolidating the election into the regular election cycle to reduce the total expense incurred by the district. So I am seeking your approval of this resolution to achieve those goals.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion?
I'll move resolution 26-17-18.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry.
And I'll second.
Second by Mrs. Roger. Again, this is a roll call vote. Any discussion from the board? Mrs. Campbell.
Mr. Quesenberry.
Yes.
Mrs. Roger.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mr. Millar.
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Passes 6-0.
Okay. We next have a public hearing, item 6.01. This is a public hearing on the proposed tentative agreement with CSEA, and that would be Mrs. Newland.
So we are required to allow the public to speak on this issue, and so you'll open the public hearing and see if anybody in the audience is interested in speaking on this item, and then close the public hearing.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing for item 6.01 on the proposed tentative agreement with CSEA. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing. Moving on to item 7.01, approval of the tentative agreement with CSEA. And again, Mrs. Newland.
So I'd like to thank Mr. Quesenberry for being part of the CSEA IBB team and CSEA for their thoughtful work on this tentative agreement. This is about 6 months worth of meetings and coming up with changes that we'd like to see to the contract. And so it is presented to you today for your approval.
Great, thank you. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item?
Are you going to make the motion?
And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Somebody like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the tentative agreement with CSEA.
So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman. And
I'll second it, but I just want to make a comment.
Second by Mr. Millar, and then go ahead.
For the public, that this is not the first that the board has heard of this agreement. And things. So sometimes it looks like all this happens pretty pro forma and stuff, but we know it's in there.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other board discussion? And so I think we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Millar to approve the tentative agreement with CSEA. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Item 7.02. Approval of annual declaration of need for fully qualified teachers. Mrs. Newland.
Yes, so this document goes to the state every year, signed off by the superintendent and with board approval, that we will do a due diligence search for our candidates when we are hiring certificated employees. So it basically says we will go out to career fairs, we will post vacancies, we will look as hard as we can to find people that are qualified for our positions. But every once in a while, we're not able to find somebody who's qualified. And the reasons for that, all the requests, so what happens is this document ends up going to the state, and we say we anticipate that these are going to be hard to fill positions for us within the next year. And as long as we indicate now on this form that we feel that these positions are going to be hard for us to fill, then they will issue us an emergency document because we've already kind of anticipated what we need. If we didn't put it on the form and we needed it, we'd have to submit this form again to the state. So this is kind of just letting them know that we anticipate that these could be problems. All of the authorizations that are on here, these emergency documents, all are add-on documents to an existing credential. So these are all teachers that already have a credential and then need something in addition to their credential in order to teach the specific population that they're looking to teach. So a CLAD is for English language learners. It's an authorization that's done here in California. Typically, when people come from out of state, they won't have a CLAD, so they'll have to get an emergency document, and then they'll have 1 year to work towards obtaining that document. They have to obtain it within 5 years per state standards, but we require it during the probationary period that they complete that. So the state will not issue you a second emergency credential for the following year unless you've made steps to obtaining it. Also on there are bilingual authorizations, other credentials. So, for example, we'll fly positions that are, chemistry/ag science. And somebody might have a chemistry credential but not the ag science credential. So they'll get the emergency document for ag science and work on getting that second credential. So quite a few of these are people that have two credentials and they have the first credential and are working on that second credential. So by signing this, it says that basically we agree to follow all the rules of the state, that we will go through the hierarchy of hiring. We'll try to find qualified people. But should we not be able to find qualified people, we'll next next move to like internships and other supporting ways of bringing people into our organization, and we will apply for the following emergency documents if needed.
Great.
Questions?
My question really is, so these are an estimated number. They're not necessarily very hard numbers. This is just areas that you've identified.
Estimated based on the past years.
There's no numbers.
Thank you.
My form is blank.
And Mr. Buckman. Mr. Buckman.
Hi, Chris. So I had sent you some questions, and I appreciate those answers, and very clear. So I just want to maybe for everybody, but for me, it seems like the number of CLAD certificates that we're needing each year is going down, and is that or holding the thing? But anyway, the question is it seems from what you sent me, the CLAD is now part of the...
Well, it's embedded into all the new credentials.
Right.
The great part is that all recent graduates in California are getting it embedded within their credentials, so they don't need the CLAD. So the people that need the CLAD are the ones coming from out of state, or they would be people like me I used in the example. If I were to go back into the classroom, my credential is quite old, and so therefore it was not embedded in my credential, and I would have to go get the CLAD in order to be a teacher.
And then so the form I'm looking at has no estimated number of credentials needed, and in the past it seems like we've had numbers on here. Can somebody help me with that, please?
Well, the numbers are there. See, it says CLAD 10, bilingual authorization 4.
Okay.
My form is also blank.
We're seeing up here. We're not seeing anything on there.
I think that might be a technical glitch.
We're looking at I'm looking at PDF. The PDF down at the bottom, 2018-19.
Yeah, that one.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So let me go quickly through it then for you. Is that we're requesting 10 CLAD, which is the English Learner Authorizations.
Kristen, can I stop you?
Yeah, absolutely.
How soon do you need this? Do you need this tonight?
No, we can put this on the next agenda if you'd like.
Because I'm not sure if this is what went out to the public that we should be approving this, considering that nobody on the board saw those numbers.
Jim has the numbers.
So you guys saw the numbers.
That's why I was asking her about the numbers. I wasn't.
Yeah, we're all in board docs and we're not seeing it. Excuse me. We're gonna take a 2-minute recess right now. Thank you very much.
Okay, so Mark got it.
Okay, so we're back in session. This was apparently a technical glitch on the iPad. The folks that are looking at it on iPads, so it did go out correctly to the public. So if we could just take a look at that real quick.
We're requesting 10 English Learner Authorizations, or CLADs, and then 4 Bilingual Authorizations. And those are applicants for both of those two that already hold an underlying teaching credential. We're requesting those bilingual authorizations in the language of Spanish. And then 1 Teacher Librarian Services. We are interviewing 1 applicant next week, but that has been a hard position for us to fill.
And that's Mrs. Haupt's position?
Yes. The hard part about that credential is they have to have an underlying teaching credential. So they can't have a master's in library science. They have to have an underlying teaching credential and then have another credential, another authorization. So it's kind of like an administrative credential where I have an underlying teaching credential and then I have an administrative credential. The library services credential is the same way. So it's hard to find people that have this.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. Any further comments from board members? Then I'm going to bring it up to a vote. All in favor? Aye.
Does it need to be moved and seconded?
Oh, you know what it does, doesn't it? Dang it. How about I just like roll through this without making motions and
seconds? About I move approval of item 7.02?
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry, and the president is well chastised. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries 6-0. Let's move to item 7.03, the board priorities for 2018-19. Dr. Prater.
Yes, on Monday, June 11th, the board held its summer workshop. And during that summer workshop, they developed priorities for the 2018-19 school year, as is up on the screen right now. They also determined and made a recommendation for a process to revise the district's vision and mission statement in the coming year. And also, they discussed expectations for campus safety, communications, education foundation development, and the board calendar. And speaking of the board calendar, I want to take responsibility for a glitch that occurred leading up to the changes that were made with the board summer workshop. Originally, we made the adjustment in November, where we had our December, when we had our organization meeting, and we scheduled the board summer workshop on June 14th. And then because of various scheduling issues, we in April revised that to June 11th. And so we made all the necessary notifications and modifications except in one place, which was on the PDF calendar, board meeting calendar, that was originally adopted in December. We did not make the changes there. So members of the public deserve an apology for that glitch. For those that were planning on attending that workshop, they would have arrived on the 14th and no one would be there. Instead, we held it on the 11th. Now, we did follow the law and protocol in all other respects of posting the agenda for the meeting, but we do apologize for that glitch. That said, the board priorities are rich, robust, and challenging. And what they are up on the screen. So the top priority is academic excellence and achievement, and that's reflected in the board's number one priority, which places a focus on equity to ensure all students have access to high-quality learning and achievement opportunities. And using the LCAP as our guiding document, which has those goals and has those specific expectations embedded in that. Those LCAP focus areas and goals reflect our rich outreach process. In addition, the board wanted to make very clear that in its priorities that equity should be used and as a lens through any and all programmatic decisions. And that is why we're working with Trudy Arriaga and Kristen Looney in the coming year. And additionally, the board's strongly set in motion a desire that we continue our outreach and support, continue, sustain, and expand outreach to parents and the community, including particular attention to our students who are economically disadvantaged and families. Also provide additional information and support to our Latino students and families who at this particular time in our state and nation are facing particular hardship. And we recognize that. The second priority falls under fiscal responsibility. And in those areas, because of the Diablo Canyon closure, the board is strongly focused on managing and planning for the plant's closure and ensuring that the district do its best to manage and enhance district revenues. In fact, they say relentlessly pursue alternative funding sources, and we are doing that. And then finally, and most importantly, is maintain fiscal discipline in the face of a precarious future. So we have done that. Our budget that was adopted last board meeting reflected another $1 million in reductions, so that over the last 2 years, we have managed to reduce approximately $3 million in expenditures. So we will continue this work. These are the priorities set forth. And I met with our administrative team on Friday of last week to review these. So all our administrators are focused on these priorities as they go into their summer planning mode to start the new year. And I ask that you adopt these priorities as we move forward.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Dr. Prater, I do have a question, and there is quite a bit here, and I think the board, you know, I think I can speak for the board. I think we're very excited about how these indicators will help us and the district and the public determine our success and how we're moving forward. So can you tell me what the process you're going to use is to actualize these things?
Yes. The later this evening, you'll hear the presentation for the elementary achievement report and the secondary achievement report. Those are using local indicators. We also have the SBAC results that will come out. Hopefully, we'll be able to have those ready by the start of the year. You also heard Mrs. McGrath mention that we have data reviews starting in the summer, where we have our elementary principals and our secondary principals meet, and we use those achievement targets that are reflected in the student achievement indicators for success. And you'll see that you'll see multiple indicators in there. And so what we will do is we will look at each of these areas. For example, A through G, those are outside of the SBAC. A through G means that our student graduates have taken the courses necessary to qualify to get into a California State University or a University of California University program. Those are the benchmarks that we use to determine whether kids are college ready. We believe, regardless of one's socioeconomic background, they should be ready, or whether they're prepared to go on to a trade. We believe having them ready with A through G preparation will be good for them in their lives, meaning that they're academically proficient as they leave high school. Now, they might change their mind if they go through a trade down the road, but we know if we get them A through G ready, that they will have opportunities they wouldn't otherwise have if they go on to a community college and get on that academic track to get into a four-year university. So we'll be working on measurable targets for continuous improvement, for relative progress, for student groups in cohorts as they graduate, to demonstrate that we are having more and more students A through G ready upon graduation. I will present that to the board in the fall as we get these results, especially broken down by subgroup, so you can see them within the subgroup populations. Additionally, we can do that for AP enrollment. We can do that for attendance. Now, we know if students are at school, they're likely learning. When they're not at school, they fall more rapidly behind. What we know is that higher rates of truancy exist for our students who are economically disadvantaged. We need to show measurable progress towards that. These are just basic examples. The LCAP has many of these measurable targets, typically set at anywhere from 2 to 5% incremental progress markers. My intention is to work with my team over the summer, bring back to you in the fall, and say, here's what we think our targets are for the year, to show you as a board that we're making relative progress among all student groups in these specific areas, which is why in that particular column it says indicators of success. That is like the hard data. Soft data will be focusing in on some of we recently took the California Healthy Kids Survey data this last spring, and we will have that data ready for the fall. Also in the fall, we intend to give our Youth Truth survey again. Well, this last year, we give it for the first time. So now we have benchmark data on how kids feel among their peers and about their schools and the adults in the school. So we'll have benchmark data to then look at and say, hey, did we make a dent? Are we showing progress in these areas? We are rigorously going into a professional development process, working on with Trudy Arriaga and Kristen Looney on equity and civil dialogue, which hopefully will encourage a safer, more engaging school climate for our kids. This I could talk about for days. In addition, I feel like our work with the Central Coast for Inclusive Schools, GALA, and Trans Central Coast, and we're working with those organizations on ways they can work with our administrative team, our counselors, and some of our athletic directors to ensure that we are culturally responsive and inclusive and educated in the areas around school safety and encouraging environments of inclusivity. So we'll be working really hard on that in the coming year. We believe by doing that, we'll see improved results. And that's just one way that I intend to bring to you measures of accountability and growth.
Any board comments on this? No. Did any public comment? Mr. Quisenberry?
No, I was just going to move the adoption of the 2018-2019 board priorities.
And I'll second.
It's been moved by Mr. Quisenberry and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Item 7.04, the consolidated app. And for her third to last action, I guess, Mrs. Shields.
Thank you. As you know, the California Department of Education requires the consolidated application for funding categorical programs to be submitted annually. The first part is we complete in February, and the final part is completed in June for your approval. The comprehensive application covers four federally funded programs, Title I, Title II, Title III, and new this year as part of Every Student Succeeds Act, Title IV. Title I, as you know, is funding is intended to meet the educational needs of low-achieving students enrolled in our highest poverty schools. Our district's Title I funds have been historically allocated to six of our elementary schools with the highest numbers of socioeconomically disadvantaged students. That would be Baywood, Del Mar, Hawthorne, Monarch Grove, Pacheco, and Smith. The law also requires that schools with 75% or more socioeconomically disadvantaged students receive Title I funding. So Pacific Beach High School will continue to receive Title I allocation. Title II is a federal program designed to improve teacher and principal quality through professional development and teacher recruitment. Title III is specifically designed to assist English learners in acquiring English and achieving grade level standards and graduation requirements. The funds are meant to supplement the work and funding the district already spends with general budget dollars. And finally, Title IV is called the Student Support and Academic Enrichment Program. And the purpose of Title IV is to increase the capacity for districts to provide students with access to well-rounded education, improving school conditions for student learning, and also improving the use of technology in order to improve the academic achievement and digital literacy for all students. So San Luis Coastal is eligible to apply for a total of an estimated $1,070,112 in categorical funding. The application will be reviewed was reviewed by our District English Learner Advisory Committee in May, as well as our District Title I Advisory Committee. And I'm seeking your approval to submit the application.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address this? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Buckland?
Thanks. Hi, Amy. Big smile. So as I went through this, I just had a few questions. And one of them, as I looked at the emphasis on the EL students, and I was wondering, it seems like we're doing a good job. We got the outreach nights and literacy nights and math nights. Oh. And then I was thinking, and I'm not sure if this is a question or a statement, but are there resources and services that we are providing to those families? Is there some way that they can be involved, or are they involved? If they're particularly in a situation where they either work nights or they don't have the ability to get to the school for mm-hmm. for the on-site activities?
Well, night activities are just one example of how we engage parents in our school community. We do it through online electronic communication. We have coffees with the principal. We have various PTA and parent leader groups that meet at different times depending on the site. I think each one's a little bit different. I could give you some examples. One that comes to mind is Baywood engaging parents to become volunteers and be able to support their students at home by attending a during-the-morning time where they're trained on how to best support your child with homework and reading, just as an example. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that's great. I appreciate it. And just real quickly, it's page 5 in your report, and I look down at the bottom of the budget, and it looks like there's like about $24,000, maybe $23,000 that we have not spent yet to date. I don't know if we can do that before. The first question is there carryover? And then how can we maybe utilize that next year?
There is carryover, and this report was completed in March, April, for approval in May, and I'm sure it's already changed. And by the end of this year, it will be more than likely either gone, but if it isn't, there is carryover.
That's all.
We also have a portion of this that goes to our nonprofit private schools, mm-hmm. and that carries over as well. And they're sometimes a little bit slower than we are in spending that money.
Well, that's good to hear. When it comes to on the homeless, I was interested to see on page 9, there's the number 5.6 full-time equivalent. And so I'm making a guess here, but I'm thinking we don't have 5 full-time people working with the homeless. So I'm wondering what that FTE number is composed of.
You're correct. It's a percentage.
Okay.
It's a percentage of Chris Dowler's. So it's a 5.6%.
Oh, okay. I read it. I'm sorry. I read it as 5 full. Right. Okay, 5.6 people. Thank you. I appreciate mm-hmm. that. And then just real quickly, if you can, and how do we define a homeless student? Because I know that the numbers in the county are pretty high that are reported by the county. Something over 5,000 students.
I don't know that I can give you the exact description for that. I know we get the numbers and figures from CalPADS.
That's great. I just was trying
there's actually a list of what defines a child as homeless, and
right.
could be doubling up. It could be in a shelter. It could be several things. That information is then verified through the school site and eventually ends up in CalPADS.
Great. Appreciate it. That's a great mm-hmm. report.
I would just point out that we appreciate every single penny we get from anybody. That, in my mind, I'm happy to have a million extra dollars, but it's, I think, a drop in the bucket. I did a little calculation, and I think I'm correct. So about 40% of our students receive free and reduced lunch. Mm-hmm. So given... $791,000, it comes out to about $263 per student extra, which we appreciate. But the truth is, I don't think it's enough, and I think we should continue to talk about it and continue to highlight the work that we're doing, but the necessity for more for our students, especially our English language learners and our SED students. So I just want to make that comment. Would somebody like to make a motion to approve the consolidated app? Mr. Quisenberry, are you doing it?
First, I'm going to concur with your comments about the inadequacy of the funding. But having said that, I want to move approval of the consolidated application.
So we have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, and I'll second that. Any further board discussion? Did I go to the public? Any public discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Item 7.05. You're in the home stretch, Mrs. Shields, Elementary Student Achievement Report.
Thank you. So the elementary common assessments have evolved over the past now 7 years as we've transitioned to our standards, new curriculum, and certainly more rigorous instruction in San Luis Coastal. Our common assessments have been designed to meet 3 major purposes: measure and report student achievement on state standards over time, measure program effectiveness, and provide consistency across our district in measuring student progress. The results from our common assessments provide data that can be used for grade level, school-wide, and district-wide conversations focused on improving student outcomes. In the board packet, I shared end-of-year achievement data from our common assessments in reading, writing, and math. I included a description of each assessment and an analysis of our end-of-year results. The results are shared by grade level as well as by identified student groups. For my report tonight, I'm going to share district-wide results showing multi-year trends in math, reading, and writing. I will also share end-of-year results for our identified student groups, as well as a three-year growth comparison for each of our LCAP student groups. Let's begin with math. So this is the fourth year of implementation of the Bridges Math Program for kindergarten through second grade, and the third grade of implementation for our grades 3 through 5. So how did our students do? At the end of the year, data shows that 73% of our kindergarten through fifth grade students are meeting or exceeding grade level expectations, up 3 percentage points from the prior year and 7 percentage points over 2 years. As students spend more time with the Bridges curriculum and teachers have grown in their understanding and efficacy around teaching with Bridges, I expect that we're going to continue to see this steady growth. If we look a little deeper at end-of-year student group comparisons, I'm going to go over this one in detail because you're going to see it repeat in the other subject areas. So what you see up here is the green representing students who met or exceeded end-of-year expectations, the yellow representing students who are approaching but not quite there, and that orange is really your at-risk group, students that need more time, have not yet met the standard, and we need to be paying attention to them. When you look at the groups down the left-hand side, see if I can do that. There we go. The top is going to show you the district total, and again, this is for K-5. Right underneath that is the non-socioeconomically disadvantaged student group. Underneath that is the socioeconomically disadvantaged student group. I'm going to refer to that as SED at this point, or we're going to be here till 10 o'clock tonight. Underneath that is our English learner, or EL group, reclassified fluent English proficient, or RFEP group, and special education or students with IEPs. So as you can see, 83% of our non-SED student group, 58% of our SED student group, 48% of our English learners, 69% of our reclassified students, and 42% of our students with IEPs met end-of-year expectations. So the data does verify what we know, is that the current achievement gap between our non-SED and SED and EL student group in math achievement still exists. Let's move on, though, and look a little bit further. This slide is a new way to look at it for you this year. And what this shows is a three-year growth comparison for each of our LCAP-identified student groups. While we're happy to see, over 3 years, high levels of growth for both EL and SED, you can see EL had a 7% growth, SED had a 7%. You can also see that they're not accelerating at a faster rate than our non-SED or total district group. And what we know is that in order to narrow the achievement gap, we need to see these groups accelerating at a faster rate. As the next step, we're going to be implementing ST Math, which I've told you about at a previous meeting, at each of our elementary sites. This online personalized math program was piloted over the last 2 years at both Baywood and Monarch Grove Elementary. And the reason I'm sharing that with you is because early results from the SBAC assessment this spring showed the SED student groups from both schools made significant progress in accelerating student achievement, Baywood by 6 percentage points and Monarch Grove by a whopping 14 percentage points. So I'm hopeful that the addition of ST Math to our already very rigorous math curriculum is going to make the difference and support our SED and EL students in making those accelerated gains needed. So let's move on to reading. As you know, for kindergarten through second grade, our students are assessed with the Benchmark Assessment System, or BAS. Here you see a 5-year comparison of student performance. The results indicate that 79% of our kindergarten through second graders met end-of-year proficiency in reading, showing again a slight growth from the prior year. If we take a closer look at our identified student groups, you can see that 86% of our non-SED versus 67% of our SED group, 59% of our English learners, 78% of our reclassified English learners and 47% of our students with IEPs met end-of-year expectations. We can read from this data that there's still a 19 percentage point gap between our non-SED and SED student group. The three-year growth comparison for each of our LCAP-identified student groups indicate an accelerated growth rate, you can see there, for our English learner group in the BAS. With that said, you can also see a 16% drop in our RFEP group. And as we've kind of pondered this, when we think about our K-2 group of students, that's a very early grade for a student to be reclassified from learning a second language to becoming designated as an English learner. It's also a very small group of students. And so with that, you see that relative change quickly either up or down based on less kids, if that makes any sense. Okay.
Your N is like 40 or something like that, isn't it, Amy? 47?
Yeah.
So it's 27. Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
Okay. With that said, for our SED group, our non-SED, and even our total district, the data is pretty flat. We've kind of plateaued on the BAS at this point in time. We need to continue doing what we know is good for kids in that early primary intervention reading. But I'm going to show you something a little bit more interesting, or when you see the results of our work over a number of years when we look at our SRI third through sixth grade. So let's move on to that. As you know, third through sixth graders take the Scholastic Reading Inventory, or SRI, three times a year. A five-year comparison shows that 73% of our students this year met or exceeded proficiency expectations, again, up a slight 1% from previous year. So, yes, these things are kind of matching our SBAC results to some degree. If we take a closer look at our identified student groups, you can see that 86% of our non-SED versus 54% of our SED, 19% of our English learners, 70% of our reclassified students, and 33% of students with IEPs met year-end expectations in reading. So you can see the data shows a 32 percentage growth gap in achievement between our non-SED and SED student group in reading. And we're reminded of the importance to provide additional supports and intervention in reading with our youngest learners to best avoid that type of achievement gap between student groups. But I want you to see the next slide, because it's a little bit more encouraging.
Amy, can I?
Yes.
When we look at these results versus the SBAC, the preliminary mm-hmm. SBAC results, are we seeing a fairly good alignment between
yes.
both the BAS and
comparable.
The SRI?
Well, the BAS we can't measure because
right.
it's K-2, so okay. SRI it is comparable.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So this slide shows you a three-year growth comparison for each of our LCAP-identified student groups. The results indicate an accelerated growth rate for both our socioeconomically disadvantaged students and English learners. So what I mean by that is you can see overall we made a 2 percentage point growth. Our non-SED, who are already way up high, and you know it's harder to go once you're up at a high level to achieve. So what we know is we need to see these groups accelerating. And at least for this last year, we saw that acceleration. The work now is for our school sites to closely look at their site data to determine what actions or services cause this acceleration so they can make sure they continue this to implement and strengthen these practices. Okay. So we're going to finish up with writing. We're now in our fifth year of implementing our district writing curriculum. As you can see, we've come a long way over 5 years with 67% of our students meeting grade level expectations. In the past 4 years, we've grown from 44 to 67. Let's see, I believe that's a 23% percentage point growth. If we take a closer look at our student groups, we can see 77% of our non-SED students, 53% of our SED students, 49% of our English learners, 55% of our reclassified English learners, and 33% of our students with IEPs met end-of-year expectations in writing. And again, we can see a 24 percentage point gap in achievement between our non-SCD and SCD student group. So let's take a look at how this is looking over time. Again, this is a real plus when you look at our English learner group. So what the results indicate, an accelerated growth rate for not only our English learner, but our SCD group as well. When you compare this, I mean, the SCD is just a teeny bit more than the non-SCD, but it's the type of acceleration that we need to see to narrow that gap. And it really is evidence that right now in writing, we are narrowing that gap. So as we begin to review the CAS results, as Mrs. McGrath said earlier, for third through sixth grade, we're seeing a promising acceleration of achievement for our SCD students at a number of our sites, not all of our sites, but at a number of them, especially in mathematics. The work of narrowing the achievement gap is intentional in San Luis Coastal, and it takes a steady, long-term, continuous focus. Each of our elementary sites will spend time this summer reviewing both common assessments and CASP results to develop their site plans for meeting the needs of all students. This time, I'm happy to take any of your questions.
Sure. First of all, is there anybody from the public that would like to ask a question? This is not an action item. Anybody from the board? Mr. Buckman.
Hey. Amy, I really want to thank you for adding the three-year comparisons, because it really brings it home for me. And I guess what I'm hearing is it brought it home for the staff, too, of areas. And mostly what I'm seeing is something that you taught us earlier this year, which I thought I knew just gut level, but that where you had the SCD kids and they were marching through the grades and they needed that extra push and they were never going to catch up unless extra work was done. So I'm really glad that we've got this data now. I was looking at page 4 of the original presentation. I don't know if that still exists. It's the SRI, Students Meet End of Year Proficiencies. Yeah, so, well, this one had more categories. It's the one I'm looking at is vertical. Anyway, the one that I'm looking at shows third, fourth, fifth, sixth, SRI proficiency.
Right, that was included in your packet.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's not, okay,
it's
so we
not
don't
in
have
the slides.
Okay,
correct.
Sorry about that. So as I look across that, while there's growth from across the grades as they go through the mm-hmm. grades between meets and exceeds, a lot of people are moving up into exceeds. Those that are approaching and need more just seems to be sort of flat.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that part of what's going to be addressed as you look at the SED approach also? So it looks like we have this SED, and we know the AEL situation, but this also looks like we're not making much growth across the grade levels in the SRI. And do you have that chart now?
I do. I'm trying to think about it thoughtfully for a minute here. I think what we know when you look at it, I think you're comparing it kind of an apples and an oranges. When we look at grade level growth and grade level achievement, what we've seen in SRI is what we know is that after third grade, it's harder to make that growth. With that said, when we looked at this chart, despite that, we're seeing our at-risk student group start to make that jump, and that makes me happy, even though it's much lower. So in each grade level, when you look at it, you have to break it down. So, let's take a look at fifth grade. We know that 46% have reached proficiency, 28 are approaching, 18 are, you know, not there yet, and 8% we're concerned about. What you need to do is look at that student by student. If you want to break it out in SCD, you can certainly do that. Great.
Mrs. Shields, on the approaches expectations, is that question one? Is that quantifiable? You know, is it, you know, you're almost there, but you're off by this or that. And second, do the teachers understand that as as a measurement of how far a student goes, or even if it's not very far? So I guess I'm looking for some sort of response on that.
The teachers understand it, I would say, much better than I do, because they're giving the assessment and then looking at the scores for each one of their students that they're working with in their classrooms. So they see how close each child get to meeting expectations, and they know, especially when they do this in the middle of the year after first trimester, they do it again after second trimester, based on the learning, they're able to see who's right there and at that cusp levels that you're talking about that I might need to pull into a small guided math group, that they just need this one little thing and they're going to be up there, versus kids who are in the orange group that I may need to do something a little bit more intense for this group of kids, or get some help from the math intervention teacher if there happens to be one, or get some tutoring going on for this child. So there are different levels of need, and the teacher sees all of this, and this is part of what they do during summer planning time, as well as during after the first trimester and first and second trimester. They have a full planning day where they look at their end of trimester data, they celebrate, and they group, and they think about what do we need to do during that next trimester to shore these kids up.
Great, and I just want to say, I think one of the things that Dr. Prater mentioned was the look at cohort groups, because I think that's going to be really important, and I'm really glad we're going to be doing that as well. So, any other board comments? Well, Mrs. Shields, this is it. Does it feel good?
It's been a pleasure.
For those who are watching, this is Mrs. Shields' last night. She is retiring. This is her last presentation on her last night, so we wish her the very, very best.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we should give you a standing ovation,
no,
Mrs.
Hey, hey. Thank you. The crowd.
You're kind.
And with that, since you started it, I will take advantage of the opportunity to say it's been an honor and it's been a pleasure to serve this school board. In 39, believe it or not, years that I've been doing this, I've worked with a lot of school board members, and this is truly the most engaged, the most professional, the kindest, and although you could smile a little more when I'm making my presentations, truly, truly an awesome board, and our district is lucky to have you. So thank you very much.
Well, Mrs. McGrath, follow that. This is going to be the secondary ELA and Math Common Assessment Report. Thank you, Mrs. Shields and Ms. O'Hagan.
Great, thank you. Yeah, hard act to follow. It's definitely not my last. So tonight, Mrs. O'Hagan and I will be sharing a secondary end-of-year achievement for both mathematics and English language arts. You want to click one there, Jen? Just want to clarify what we'll see tonight versus what you saw in the first report. So you'll remember earlier in the year we shared results for our common assessments for English language arts for narrative. And so we will add informational as well as argumentative to the report that we share today. And in mathematics, we shared SVMI task 1. And so we'll be able to share the continuation of that of SVMI task 2 for today. I do want you to know that tonight you'll be able to see 2 years of comparable data. We are working towards 3. Absolutely love the way elementary kind of grouped that and work. Know that we're working towards consistency in both of these reports for you, and we're almost there with secondary. So we are on the road to being there, and then I think there'll be even more consistency with that. This evening, I think also you'll see many areas to celebrate, and I do want to caution us to, kind of similar to what Mrs. Shields said, be careful about putting too much emphasis on gains where there's a small number of students. I think sometimes we can draw an inaccurate conclusion when there's only, as Ryan said, an N of 27 on that one. We have some where there's an N of 20 and 31 and that kind of thing, and as you know, a couple of students can make those results go drastically up and drastically drastically down. You'll see a couple of instances this year where it jumped drastically, and I think we just have to be careful that we don't say, wow, we must have done something really dramatically different with that group when it could have been four students that were incredibly different. So just to kind of caution us to that before we look at drawing conclusions there. So I'll hand it over to Ms. O'Hagan. I'll help draw conclusions at the end and be happy to answer any questions.
Good evening. Okay. Am I on? There we are. Okay. So at the secondary level, like she said, we administer three common assessments throughout the year: narrative, informative, and argumentative. The middle school data has been combined, so I've combined grades 7 and 8. And the high school data has also been combined, grades 9 through 12. We will also look at two-year comparative data, as well as the achievement of our student LCAP groups. And all assessments are scored using the SBAC rubric, which is graded on three areas: purpose and organization, evidence and elaboration, and conventions and grammar. All right, so this slide shows us our middle school, our middle schools combined 7th and 8th grade. The blue bar indicates 2016-17 data, and the green bar indicates this year, 17-18 data. All percentages reflect standard met or exceeded. So we notice here that growth from 1 year to the next, that we see growth from 1 year to the next in both narrative and informative. And there is a slight dip in argumentative. Argumentative writing is more of a complex task, as it requires students to make a claim or form an opinion, provide detailed support for the claim, address one or more counterarguments, and write a rebuttal. So it's definitely more challenging. We'll continue to work with teachers and administrators on addressing this skill. And then the next three slides, we will show a two-year comparison in each assessment by our student groups for grades 7 and 8. So narrative writing, just to get our minds wrapped around this, this requires students to either write a fiction-based narrative, like telling an imaginative story, or write a factual-based personal narrative, telling about an actual event that the writer experienced. So let's look at narrative writing and how it compares across our student groups. The numbers in the parentheses next to each group label indicate the total number of students in that group for this year. These numbers are very similar to last year's total student numbers, so I did not put last year's total student numbers on the slide. What we see for narrative writing is that each group shows improvement, with our RFEP group improving by 16 percentage points. When looking at our two target groups, the SED and RFEP, we see that the achievement gap between SED and non-SED has decreased from last year. So if we look at last year, between SED and non-SED, the blue, that has that was 26 points last year. There was a 26-point gap, and now it's down to a 23-point gap this year when you look at the green, the 55 and 78. Okay, the achievement gap between RFEP and all has also decreased from a 19-point gap last year to a 13-point gap this year. So we are closing the achievement gap in our targeted student groups from year to year on narrative writing. Okay, informative writing requires students to assimilate information, taking it from sources, and then increase the reader's knowledge of a topic, explain a procedure, or explain a concept in more depth or detail. So what we notice here for informative writing, most of our student groups are showing growth. There is a dip in EL and students with disabilities, but keep in mind, like Kim mentioned earlier, that these groups are considerably smaller than the others, and just one or two students can have a significant impact on movement either way. The RFEP group really shines in this area of writing. So RFEP has improved 16 percentage points, just like we saw earlier in narrative, and our RFEP group have narrowed the achievement gap considerably this year. So when comparing RFEP to all, we can see that last year there was a 14-point achievement gap, and this year it has been reduced to a 6-point gap. And argumentative writing. Here in argumentative writing for our middle schools, despite this being the more complex writing task, our English learners, RFEP, and SWD students all showed growth. The achievement gap for both of our target groups, again, the SED and the RFEP, has narrowed this year, with RFEP at only a one-point gap this year. So we have, You can see RFEP 67% as opposed to 68% all. So we've really narrowed that gap as well this year. So again, we are closing the achievement gap. Sites at the middle schools are discussing goals and actions around these students. They're looking at them individually, they're monitoring progress, and they're implementing interventions. So now let's take a look at high school. This slide shows the overall achievement in ELA for our high school students. All student groups, all students in grades 9 through 12 were administered these assessments, and the data displayed is the combined results of grades 9 through 12. So what you notice here, obviously, is this is a baseline year for narrative in high school. So no data previously was reported in 16-17. Okay. We see a dip similar to middle school in argumentative. However, when comparing middle school to high school, we see growth in both narrative and argumentative. So what we can conclude from this, overall students are improving from middle school to high school in writing, especially in the narrative and argumentative. Okay, so narrative writing in high school, we notice overall that these student groups showed improvement, like I said earlier, from middle school to high school, which means then that the achievement gap in high school is smaller for our targeted student groups, the SED and RFEP. Okay, so it's just really great to see growth as students are moving and progressing through our school district. And next year, we will have comparative data for high school narrative writing. Informative writing, and here we notice growth from year to year in all student groups. Looking at the achievement gap specifically in our target groups, our SED and RFEP, it has narrowed by 2 percentage points from last year to this year. Okay. Our SED and non-SED, our SED when we compare it to non-SED, went from a 24-point gap last year to a 22-point gap this year. RFEP, and as compared to our all group, went from a 15-point gap last year to a 13-point gap this year. So we are moving in the right direction. Okay. What we notice for argumentative writing, there's growth in almost all student groups. And again, like I want to remind you that this is one of the most challenging of the three assessments. High schools have focused on instructional strategies. English departments have scheduled meetings after the assessment administration to analyze the common assessment data, share strategies, make adjustments, and set goals. Okay, let's shift to mathematics. In mathematics, students are administered two separate math tasks in math grade 7, math grade 8, algebra 1, geometry, and algebra 2. Each task covers different mathematical concepts within each course. So we will be looking at each task side by side by course and then by student group for 2017-18 only. So just for this past year. We will provide comparative data next year. Okay. This slide shows data for all students enrolled in Math 7 and then in Math 8. Task 1, which you see in blue, was administered in the middle of the school year, and Task 2, which you see in green, was administered at the end of the school year. These percentages, again, reflect met or exceeded standard. So what do we notice here? Overall, students have improved in grade 7, but they've shown a dip in grade 8 when looking at it from Task 1 to Task 2. And as I mentioned earlier, each task covers different concepts within the same grade level. So the dip in Math 8 could be attributed to not spending enough time developing those concepts required of Task 2. Moving forward, teachers will need to evaluate their assessment calendars to ensure that they are providing adequate time to cover the concepts required of Task 2 in Grade 8. It'll be interesting to see in the year-to-year comparative data next year as we move into the 18-19 school year. During the next few slides, we will look at each course and the performance broken down by student group. Okay, Okay, so let's look at Math 7. This slide shows the performance of grade 7 math broken down by student groups. What we notice here, most of our student groups reflect growth. However, we still show an achievement gap in our two target groups, the SED compared to non-SED, and the RFEP as it compares to all of our students. In Math 8, we see a different picture. What we notice here, there is a consistent shift from Task 1 to Task 2 across all of our groups. The dip in the second task in Grade 8 could be attributed to more complex concepts from Task 1 to Task 2. And like I mentioned previously, there may be a need to spend more time in developing these concepts. Teachers will be using the data cycle conversations to analyze this data to inform their next steps. Okay, so now we're looking at data for high school students enrolled in Algebra 1, in Geometry, and in Algebra 2. Students improved in both Algebra 1 and 2, but again, we see Geometry showing a slight drop in performance between Task 1 and Task 2. And as I mentioned earlier, the tasks cover different concepts. One reason for this dip could be that Task 1 and Geometry covered transformational geometry concepts that were emphasized in grade 8 math. Therefore, these concepts were more familiar to the students. The second geometry task was more difficult and introduced new concepts that were unfamiliar to students and had some trigonometry in there. This could attribute to the dip, again, between task 1 and 2 for geometry. The next few slides, we will look at each course and the performance broken down by student group. So here's how our student groups performed on each task in Algebra 1. What we notice here, our students show growth across all of our groups, and the RFEP gap is very small, 4 percentage points on both tasks. In Geometry, we notice dips in our non-SED and SED and SWD groups from task to task, but we see growth in our EL and RFEP groups. As I mentioned, the geometry task 1 that was selected had concepts that were previously covered in grade 8 math, while the second geometry task introduced new concepts. So adjustments may need to happen next year so that teachers can spend more time developing the concepts covered in task 2. In Algebra 2, we see all student groups show considerable growth. And when looking at our target groups, the SED and RFEP groups, we have narrowed the achievement gap from task 1 to task 2. So like the English teachers, math departments have scheduled meetings after the assessment administration to analyze the common assessment data, share strategies, make adjustments, and set goals. With that, there's been a positive shift in using district data as an informative tool. Teachers have taken more of an ownership in creating meaningful assessments, and as a result, are more deeply interested in the results and what they mean for instruction in the classroom. So with that, I'm going to let Kim talk about conclusions.
Okay, go ahead, go to the next one. I got it. Thank you.
Okay, it'll just go by itself.
Great. So as we noted before, some of our accomplishments are that we really have created consistent common assessments with teacher feedback input, and there's a lot more ownership and buy-in now related to those assessments. We have common calendars, a common data cycle protocol, and also align those assessments to SBAC, as you mentioned earlier. So our discoveries is obviously we are achieving at either similar or improved levels except for a couple of clear areas. We see some improvement from middle school to high school, and we're closing gaps in a few areas. Kind of the next steps we think about is that we do need some more work around supporting data talks, data cycles, helping teachers to easily input information into Illuminate so that they can have those informed discussions. Our progress monitoring system is making great progress and is in a good place, but we need to continue to work on that with our teacher groups. And we do need action plans we see related to argumentative writing and then Math 8 and Geometry seem like specific areas for us to address. So those are the areas we will begin to address more specifically this year.
Happy to answer any questions.
Well, first, I'd just like to see if there's anybody from the public that wants to ask questions. I'm not seeing anyone. So this is a discussion item. Is there anybody from the board who would like to? Yeah. Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers.
I'd like to talk about RFIP kids. I mean, they're just rocking it. So I'm just wondering if you have a theory about that. So I'm imagining this for myself as I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking it's almost like their mastery of language has given them sort of superpowers. Do you think? Does it make sense to you?
It is great to see. And I think many people put more value on looking at RFIP data versus EL, because in many ways those students are still learning English and you wouldn't necessarily expect them to be meeting or exceeding a standard in an English test while you're still learning English, and also in a math test, right, that is heavy in language. So a little bit of that is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy also. You redesignate someone as fluent when they reach certain levels. And so our job is to redesignate them when they've reached that level and then maintain or grow them from there. So I do think it's a great thing to see and a really positive data point to look at.
Thank you. And I just would point out, I think one, and I don't know if this has been solved or not, but when a student becomes redesignated, they go out of the EL category, so it sort of depresses the EL students and increases the RFIP students. Has anybody been able to figure that one out yet?
I do think that's the way it that's the way it's, you know, looked at. So in some ways, people say be careful of saying we're not doing great things for English language learners, because when you're in an EL category, you're in the beginning stages of learning English. So many would say that although we want to keep a really close eye on their language acquisition, we might not necessarily expect them, when you are at a beginning level of learning English, to perform at a really high level on an English test, right? It's my first or second year of learning Japanese. If you give me a Japanese test, I'm probably not going to be exceeding your standards, right? So we do need to give kids really explicit instruction so that their English language development grows at a great rate, and we need to keep a close eye on that. And then when they do reach proficiency, are we challenging them to continue to go? And I do think you're right, Chris. It's kind of an interesting category.
Mr. Bruckman.
So along those same lines as Dr. Rogers, when I looked at the RF, the kids that are doing so great, and I'm looking at the SEDs, and it was the language you talked about, language acquisition. I'm just wondering, are there things that we could apply across the board, like for all of the subgroups?
Yeah, you make a great point. Many of English language learner instructional strategies are excellent for English language learners, and they help meet their needs and accelerate their English language development. They're also just great strategies. They're just great learning strategies that benefit every student.
Mm-hmm. So are the strategies now across the groups, or is that something that we might be looking at?
Right. So we definitely look at those strategies across instruction period, and then look at how can we be specific about, you remember kind of the student shadowing days and looking at English language learner talk, and is it academic talk, and engaging in that to be even more specific about ELs.
Sorry. Maybe I'm...
am I answering it
incorrectly? Yeah, you are, and I'm just going to push it just okay. A little further. I'm thinking, like, when you talk about academic language, that's... Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I keep talking about over the years, but it's maybe it's something that we might apply also to SED. So we talk about the kids that have gone to museums and the kids that haven't gone, the kids that know what a beaker is and the kids that don't know. And now I'm wondering whether the approach that you're taking in RF, which works so great, is something we can start instilling also into the SED program. Because you're saying the strategies are great. We're seeing the results. Mm-hmm. So it's just a quick thought that I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought I answered that, but maybe I'm wording it incorrectly.
I'm sorry, I heard you say EL.
That we are using those strategies for teachers across, because you're right, they're great for socioeconomically disadvantaged students and any student that needs additional great strategies. Yep, thank you.
Okay. I'm not seeing any other comments from the board. We have a group of first readings of board policy, and for the public, one of the most important tasks of the school board is addressing policies of the school district. We have a number of these tonight. These will be first readings. And so let's begin, I believe, Mrs. McGrath, with item 7.08. And at this point, I guess we'll treat these as first readings unless there's a request by the board to go ahead and move these forward.
Great, your choice. So,
did I say, 0.07, I'm sorry, 7.07.
Great, yeah. 7.07. So the first policy we're going to look at tonight is code of conduct. And you will note that this has multiple gamut recommendations for additions. And the subcommittee has looked at this, as well as our director of personnel, Kristen Newland, and recommends these changes. You will see that the code of conduct in many ways has been kind of elaborated on. So our district has also created a code of conduct that was brought to you a few meetings ago and looked at what our code of conduct is for us as well. So first reading, and you're welcome to ask any questions, approve this tonight, or move it for a second reading.
Okay, so first I'll go to the public. Anybody from the public? And seeing none, Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, so I just was hoping for a comment from someone. In the policy about the third paragraph, each employee is expected to acquire the knowledge and skills necessary to fulfill his or her responsibilities and to contribute to the learning and the achievement of the district students. And this was kind of going to the question of professional development my question really is does the district feel that this is an individual requirement, or does the district play an important role in making sure that the employees keep up to date on their skills and knowledge?
Mm-hmm. You make a great point. I think it is a mutual responsibility. So there are some responsibilities that the district holds as, for example, harassment training or, professional development trainings, that it is our responsibility to continue to provide updated trainings, as well as I think there's also an employee responsibility in ensuring that they're conducting themselves in a professional and ethical manner.
Thank you.
Dr. Rogers of Drath Rogers.
I'd like to thank Ellen and Mark for all the work that they do. This is a tremendous undertaking, and you've done such an excellent job. I want to say that. And also, just because I know the English teachers out there will probably catch this if we don't, we're missing a comma. it's a simple thing, but sorry to be so picky. It's just so that because it's a list of things under after district.
What page are you on?
After district, comma, advances the roles of the district's educational program, comma, which is already there. Just adding a comma. Sorry. Don't want to come back to us. You know.
Where is this? Which paragraph? I'm sorry.
It's in the very first paragraph.
Ah.
And it's so the sentence starts, employee may engage conduct that enhances the integrity of the district, comma.
Thank you.
Advances, right. There
okay.
You go.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize.
All right.
The subcommittee's great at catching grammatical things, but we can't always catch all of them.
Shall we bring this back for a second reading as part of the consent agenda next time? Or is there an interest in approving this evening?
My question, Mr. President, would be, is there any urgency about
No,
this.
Absolutely not. And it would come back at the next meeting in July as a second reading, and we'd put it in the action consent agenda. So it could be pulled by anybody for any question. So it sounds like you think this should be, we should go for a second reading on that, and that's fine.
Well, as of a half an hour ago, I thought we'd just waive second readings on some of these. But if the administration doesn't feel there's a particular urgency on these, then I think it gives it the public time to at least look at them if they care to.
Okay.
and comment on it. So,
all right. So I'm feeling that if there's not a unanimous consent from the board to take a vote tonight, then we should bring it back as a second reading for the next meeting. Is everybody okay with that? Okay. 7.08, chronic absence and truancy.
So just to make sure, this one is coming back for yes. second reading then, and that would mm-hmm. be our July 19th
yes.
Meeting. Great. Okay. Okay, the next one, yes, chronic absence and truancy. You will see here that there are substantial additions in red from Gamut. And I do have to note on this one that there are a couple of changes that I noticed the subcommittee suggested that did not show. And so if you don't mind me telling you those, in the paragraph that begins the superintendent or designee shall, the second second paragraph, the subcommittee did make a couple grammatical improvements to this paragraph that didn't show. So I just wanted to note a couple of those that the changes are showing in red, and it actually should have just shown in purple. The subcommittee did that work. If you notice the paragraph that starts the fourth paragraph, the superintendent or designee shall develop. The subcommittee did suggest outreach to families and students in the last line there. So just wanted to add that note. Again, feel free for a first reading, or be happy to bring this back for a second reading.
Is there anybody have an interest in doing this evening, or bring it back for a second reading? Second reading? Okay.
I would suggest that given Mr. Quesenberry's interest in giving the public an opportunity to read and comment between now and the next board meeting, that we just assume all will be returning for a second reading.
That works for me. Okay. So these would get again come back on our action consent agenda at the next meeting. 7.09, proposed revisions to board policy 5131.6, alcohol and other drugs.
Yes, on this one, Chris Deller looked over this information as well as your subcommittee. You'll notice that some of the major changes are the addition of the prevention and intervention programs. You can see that it starts there, and that is, you know, the big shift that you will notice, where they Gamut really suggested, you know, some eliminations of enforcement and discipline type of language and changing that to prevention and intervention programs.
Okay. And no one from the public? No. Okay. 7.09, proposed revisions to board policy 5131.6, alcohol and other drugs, first reading. Oh, I'm sorry. 7.10, steroids.
Thank you. And steroids, this is just Gamut's wording here. You can see just the one suggestion. Gamut's wording was actually that a student who is found to have violated the agreement or this policy shall be restricted from participating in athletics. And they leave it just there, participating in athletics. So the subcommittee, as well as the athletic directors, gave their suggestion of kind of clarifying that for 60 days. Seems to create a little more clarity versus kind of the open-ended suggestion from Gamut.
Okay. All right. How about 7.11, proposed revisions to board policy 5144, discipline and personal responsibility.
Thank you. In this policy, I do want to say there was a couple of mistakes that I would be happy to correct for the next time. Maybe I could show it. Okay, so you will notice the subcommittee did make a revision to the first sentence, and I apologize it was not accounted for in your document, where the first sentence there was changed to the district. So instead of board policies and regulations shall delineate acceptable student conduct and provide the basis for sound disciplinary practices, each school, instead it would say the district shall develop disciplinary rules. You'll also notice, in accordance with the law, the subcommittee was suggesting adding state and federal law. And then in the paragraph at the bottom, the superintendent or designee shall provide regular professional development, just kind of clarifying that, as well as management skills and implementing fair, effective, and non-discriminatory disciplinary techniques.
Okay. Comments? Anybody from the public? Okay.
These notes will be included in our, okay, for July.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
7.12, proposed revisions to Board Policy 5144.1, suspension and expulsion, due process first reading. And I did notice that this had some questions on it.
Great. So, yes, on this one, suspension and expulsion due process. So you will note here that Gamut made the suggestion there in red. And if you don't mind, I will show you a couple of here. Nice. You'll notice in purple, the subcommittee also made this additional sentence recommendation. The superintendent or designee shall provide regular professional development, kind of along the same pattern as the previous one, just making sure that we give employees the professional development needed.
Okay. And then you want to continue with these going to page, the bottom part of page 2.5, where I guess there's some question about whether these paragraphs should be board policy or administrative regulations. On page 2.5, toward the bottom.
Great. Yes, it was suggested that this gets really detailed and specific, which might be better suited for an AR.
Okay. So I think I'll bet you're looking for some board comment on this. Would anybody like to comment on whether the board members believe that this level of specificity belongs here, or whether this level of specificity belongs in actually an administrative regulation? And again, I'll turn to the public, and I'm not seeing anybody from the public. So I guess you're asking for board members to weigh in on this.
Mr. President, I think I don't have an issue with the last four items there. I think as being in the ARs, but I think it's important for a teacher to know and to be in the policy when a teacher requires parental attendance. The principal shall send a written notice to the parent / guardian stating that his or her attendance is required by law. I think, you know, I think that's beneficial for a teacher to see.
Okay, so the second part of the...
So the next four paragraphs there, right, the four, next four items would be, I don't see a problem with that being in the ARs.
But maintaining the when a teacher requires parental attendance?
When a teacher requires.
So that would stay in that paragraph is your recommendation.
Yes, that's my recommendation.
Policy.
Whether
okay.
You know,
other comments. I would agree that I think this sounds a lot like administrative regulations, and yeah. I would concur with Mr. Quisenberry on the teacher requirement that section in there. So I would like to see this move to an administrative regulation, but I think we need to hear from other board members about this as well.
I agree.
So Mrs. Rogers just said she agreed. Dr. Eisenrath-Rogers, Mr. Millar, Mr. Buckman. Okay, so you have your marching orders for this one for when it comes back next time. And then 7.13, parental notifications.
Great. On this one, you will see also there was quite a few recommended additions from Gamut. And if you don't mind. Thank you. I will show you one paragraph as well that the subcommittee recommended.
Just like me without my glasses.
So the document that you see has the superintendent or designee shall, you'll see the top part. The committee was recommending that we replace the first paragraph there with the paragraph included on the screen.
This would be the very first paragraph, is that the board recognizes?
Correct.
Okay, so you're recommending that... Oh, okay, I see. So so you want it to be the superintendent or... Where,
sorry, hold on. You're
where are we here?
Sorry, here we go.
Oh, I see. Okay, thank you. Can you read that for us, please?
Yes, the governing board desires to promote effective communication between the school and the home, and to keep parents' guardians informed regarding educational programs, school operations, and the legal rights of students and their parents' guardians. The superintendent or designee shall send parents, guardians, and students all notifications required by law and any other notifications he, she believes will promote parental understanding and involvement.
So do we have a consensus from the board that we would like to substitute what is showing here as paragraph number one for the recommended subcommittee paragraph number one?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, so Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, no.
Okay, Dr. Eisenrath Roger?
I'm just looking at Mark to see if the subcommittee feels like we're circumventing them by doing that.
No, it's a recommendation.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was coming for you. Okay.
Mr. Millar? Okay. So so we'll go ahead and bring this back with that other language. All right. And then I think we are at 7.14, annual adjustment to board remuneration pursuant to board bylaw 9250, and that would be Dr. Prater. Yes, in 2015, the board adopted this bylaw, board bylaw 9250, which provides remuneration in alignment in accordance with property tax increases. And when they exceed 5% or greater, then the board would up to 5%, the board would be open to receiving that particular percent increase. So, last year, our property tax increased to 5.12%, and so according to this board bylaw, the board seeking your approval, which would provide the board with a 5% increase to their monthly salary, which would amount to approximately $50, so per person, so per year. So I am seeking your approval, according to board bylaw 9250, to increase your compensation by 5%.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to us on this? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. This is an action item. Is there any discussion? Mr. Millar?
I wasn't going to discuss it. I was going to move it.
Okay. Go for it.
Particularly in view of the health care premium increases.
Okay.
So I move approval of the board policy regarding, not approval of the board policy, approval of the action related to the board policy.
Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Quesenberry. Any further board discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Item 7.15, approved salary increase and contract extension for executive contracts with Assistant Superintendent of Business and Superintendent of Ed Services, Dr. Prater.
Yes, I've completed the annual evaluation of Mr. Pinkerton and Mrs. McGrath as assistant superintendents, and they will... based on that positive evaluation, they qualify for a 2% step per the contract agreement. And I'm also seeking an additional 1% increase so that it brings them in alignment with all the other employees when they received a 1% annual increase for 3 years. So this is the final 1% increase to their contract. and I'm seeking your approval of that.
Anybody from the public that wants to address us on this? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion? Mr. Quisenberry?
Yeah, I move approval of the salary increase and contract extensions for the executive contracts with the Assistant Superintendent of Business and the Assistant Superintendent of Educational Services.
And I'll second.
And it's been a motion by Mr. Quisenberry, a second by Mrs. Roger. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 7.16, approve executive contract extension for superintendent. Back to you, Dr. Prater.
Actually, Mr. Unger, this goes back to you.
All right. Oh, so it does. Yes, board, this is the annual review of Dr. Prater's contract. As we agreed, Dr. Prater did receive an acceptable, a positive evaluation. So, Dr. Prater, can you explain the salary increase piece? Because I think we want the public to understand that you would not be taking a salary increase this year.
Yeah, per my agreement with the board, I believe 3 years ago, that I would forego any step increases or compensation increases based on my previous agreement with you 3 years ago.
Okay, so this is really approving your contract extension. Is there anybody from the public that wants to address us? Seeing none, I'd like to make that motion. I'd like to move approval of Dr. Prater's contract.
I'd like to second that, please.
Second by Mr. Buckman. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Mr. Pinkerton, that would be item 7.17, Measure D, approval of bid number 297, adult school paving improvement project.
It's actually San Luis Obispo High School as well, okay, in terms of utilizing this. So we are looking at the parking lot that's in front of the district office, as well as kind of the Taylor Field, which the San Luis Obispo High School uses. So we're trying to pick that kind of parking lot apart at pieces as we go so that we don't take away all the parking at one time. So this is the section that's probably failed the most, which is the hill that leads up to kind of the two parking levels that used to be tennis courts a long time ago when the junior high was here. So we got together, had that laid out, did a bid for that work. So this is a design bid build project. So the bids came back, as you can tell. There's quite a substantial difference between the lowest bid and the highest bid. We are not asking the board to approve the additive alternate at this point, which was currently the third layer of that is a construction laydown area for all of the work happening at Slo High. So we're going to hold off on that for now, just not do it, because there's a lot of work up there. They're going to mess up the pavement anyway. So the overall amount, the 177, did come in line with what we're seeing at Loam's and Morrowell and other projects that we're doing in terms of payment costs. So we are asking the board to take the move forward with the lowest bid in this case, because this is a little bit over the CUPCA bid limit. So 175 is normally the limit. This was 177. We will need to have at least a four-fifths majority of the board to pass this to move it forward.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back. Any comments, Mrs. Roger?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if Mr. Pinkerton or Mr. Holcomb could shed any light on why the disparity is so great between the low bid and the high bid, if you have any thoughts about that.
I think what happens at this time of the year, summertime, people are really busy. You'll see people throw crazy numbers out there just to see if they can get it. So they're already busy. They already have enough work. Their manpower is there. So, hey, let's go ahead and there's this other little project out there. Let's just throw some big number and see if we're low and if we receive it. And I think we're fortunate in that the one bid that we did receive is actually in line. So that's a positive thing, again, entering into a summer project like this. Mr. Holcomb?
There's also a difference in the kind of contractors. Oftentimes, some of these bidders will sub the work out, so they just add a big layer on top of it.
I see. Okay.
Okay, because we're talking about the difference between 177,000 and 385,000, the highest bid being double the low bid. But yes, we feel confident that the low bid is responsible?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Would you like to? Is there anybody from the public that wants to address us? Okay, Mrs. Roger, would you like to make a motion?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Let me just figure out where I am again here. This is, I move approval of item 7.17, Measure D, award of bid number 297, Adult School Paving Improvement Project.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. We have a motion from Mrs. Roger and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. 7.18, Measure D, Amendment Number 2 to Lease-Leaseback Contract with Acme Construction for the Morro Bay High School Student Services Infrastructure.
So what they've done at the Student Support Center at Morro Bay High School, as the board you may recall from our discussions at our Measure D study sessions, we've actually pulled the infrastructure piece, which is all of the groundwork, out of this project because we wanted to jumpstart that right now this summer and get a lot of that dust, dirt, digging done before the kids come back. So that's the focus of this. This is, when we initially received our estimate on this project, this is about a $7 million project, GMP and contingency. So to see the $1.35 million in terms of the infrastructure work, that's, just for you, the board, to know that's about, that will come out of the overall GMP now as we move forward. So this portion of it, out of the $7 million estimate now would be, we would expect to see a GMP of 5.7, right, something to that effect moving forward. Now, my hope is that with all of the value engineering that we did over the last few months prior to this project, which is why this is a little late coming to the board in terms of time, because we went back to the drawing board and tried to save some money and do some different things on the building, working with the architect, working with the contractor. So we're hoping to see that even that estimated GMP come down in the future. So this is the, again, the infrastructure work, so all of the site utilities. We did find out just recently when we cut off the water that the irrigation runs through that area. So we're going to have to kind of move the irrigation around. You'll see an allowance for that in the GMP to move that around so that we have access to it. And we don't, the fields can't be turned off the entire time while we're going through this process. So there's, we feel good. Acme did a great job in terms of, really reaching out to keep trying to get bids for this. Again, a summer project that's happening right now. People are busy. I have asked Mr. Holcomb to play a greater role in the bidding process for the district. So being available at the bid openings and taking part in the actual looking at the bids a little bit more. So it's been kind of a focus for us in terms of moving forward.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that wants to address us? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Any board comments, discussion? Would someone like to make a motion? I'll move approval of item 7.18. Any second on that?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mrs. Roger. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries 6-0. Let's move on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you want anything pulled. 8.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 8.02, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 8.03, disposal of surplus property. 8.04, acceptance of donations, and I'd like to pull that. 8.05, authorization for records destruction. 8.06, approval to submit ag grants for San Luis Obispo High School, Morro Bay High School. 8.07, proposed revisions to board policy 3290. This is the second reading. 8.08, second reading of proposed revisions to board policy 6020, parent involvement. And 8.09.
Pull, please.
8.09, pull. Okay, very good. Would someone like to make a motion for 8.01 to 8.03 and 8.05 to 8.08?
I will so move.
It's been moved by Mr. Millar, seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I think, Dr. Eisenrath Rogers, you and I pulled 8.04. I'll bet you for the same reason, but do you want to go ahead and talk about it?
Okay.
I just wanted to acknowledge Michael and Mary Jo Devitt for their generous donation of books to the library in honor of a retired teacher, Mark Nakamura.
And I wanted to specifically thank James Buonrostro, who donated $1,000 to delinquent student lunch accounts. And thank him very, very much, and really on behalf of the parents in the district, thank him. I would make a motion for approval of item 8.04. Dr. Eisenrath Rogers, I'll take your second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Let's move on to 8.09. I'm sorry, 8.08. Mrs. Roger.
It was 8.09.
Oh, 8.09. I'm sorry.
Head lice. We haven't talked enough about head lice.
Okay.
Thanks. My scalp itch.
I noticed that the change that I requested was partially made, but I think that where it reads the superintendent or designee also shall provide related information. Oh, no, it's not that one. Never mind. It is the one where it says, when it is determined that one or more students in a class or school are infested with head lice, the principal or designee shall. I apologize. It is there, and I when I read through it, I thought that it remained discretionary in some way, and I really wanted it to be firmed up. This is exactly what I was asking for. Thank you very much, and I will move approval of Board Policy 5141.
I'll second. We have a motion by Mrs. Rogers, second by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Mrs. Campbell or Mrs. Holmes,
in
going through the action consent agenda, did we do? I know we did 8.01 to 8.03, and then 8.05. Was it 8.05 to 8.08? And with 8.09,
I will ask when it would be very helpful if you would refer to them by titles and not numbers, because when you make those changes, we do something over here in Board Docs to slide them around, and the numbers change. So our numbers don't match what you're looking at.
Okay. So what we approved on the first go-around was approval of certificated and classified personnel items, approval of FERS, disposition of surplus property. We pulled acceptance of donation. Then we did records destruction, the ag grants, revisions to 3290. And then I wasn't sure if we did – if we approved 8.08 or if I missed.
We approved the parent involvement policy,
good.
And we pulled
and
the head lice policy.
Okay, good. Sorry, I just was a little confused. All right, let's move on to item 9.02, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that has any advanced agenda items? Seeing no one, let's go to reports by board members. Is there anybody that would like to make a report about anything other than, say, the great graduations we had?
Yes. Great.
Okay. All right. Then we will next meet on July 19th for a Measure D study session and August 21st for a regular meeting. I think the August 19th meeting will have quite a number of board policies on it as well for our approval.
Okay, so
July 19th, yes, that would be correct. Yes, absolutely, and we would approve the second readings. So the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.